Welcome to the Derek Loudermilk Show. This is episode 389 with Gil Petersill. Gil Petersill is one of the world's leading human networking teachers, and he actually calls himself the world's leading networking student. He's given over 1,000 talks about this, about building relationships. I met him through a global super connectors community. And we're going to hear some amazing stories from Gil about how he got Richard Branson to ask him for a selfie and to give him his business card in a room full of people trying to get something from Richard Branson. We're going to learn how Gil figured out telepathic networking during a darkness retreat, how he tested out his conversational skills using speed dating and buying food for homeless people, having thousands of conversations. We're going to learn what to do if you meet a king or royalty somewhere in the world or a head of state, and how to find pools, these large groups of your ideal client. Plus, Gil gave me a relationship game that is like an algorithm for amazing connective experiences that I'm going to go and try with my wife. And this whole conversation is just really fantastic, usable intel from one of the world's best at human connection. So without further ado, here is Gil Petersill. Gil Petersill, welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here.
And I think this is actually the second time we are talking. We talked because of Jessica's Super Connectors group one time, and you were in the right time zone to catch that. But I just want to start off by acknowledging you, because you did something for me after only meeting me one time, and that was make an introduction to David Verdesi, he came on the show. He was a great guest. And then we've stayed in touch, David and I have, and he's like mentoring me a little bit, which is fantastic. But this is kind of a rare thing, and it speaks to the best networkers that I know have done these sort of large or, you know, really nice favors upon like an initial meeting. And Adam Grant did that for me. Judy Robinette did that for me. Just really amazing. And I know that you're known for networking and masterminds, but I'm kind of curious how you started becoming known as like a networking thought leader. How'd you get into this?
Yeah. So, I the thing with David is really something I had to learn that is great to do in general. It's great to share. And the best thing I could share in my life is my time, my energy, and my connections. And I've learned that if I could share all of those three in balance, life is pretty good, because, time and energy, we have 24 hours a day, but we could still, change the way we think about time. And sometimes time can go by fast. Sometimes we could slow down time. Connection, introducing people is something I learned through my journey of always hoping that it would happen to me. If you go back 10 years, I was still, as I am today, an introvert. I've been an immigrant since the age of 10. And English being my third language, I found it very difficult to build relationships through my life. I found it challenging to make friends, to speak to strangers. One of the hardest things I found so difficult, even until my mid-20s, was talking to women. It was really challenging for me to just start a conversation with a pretty woman at the bar or at any event. And what I had to do is I had to step out of my comfort zones because of two main reasons. And, I think this is an adult-only podcast. I could say, one, I was horny and I wanted to meet women because I wanted to have relationships with women. Very, very, just being very honest. And the second part is, like, my parents got a divorce and I really wanted to try to help as much as I can. So I had to like find ways of making additional income streams outside of my job, because my job limited the amount of money I had. So having these two very simple but very honest needs in my early 20s, I was like, okay, what do I need to do to learn how to talk to women? Or else you're going to be single and single and single for a very long time. Boom. I had to find different steps of how do I step out of my comfort zone? It wasn't understanding what networking was back then. It was really just making friends. So my objective was not try to sleep with all the women. My objective was like, can you get women to like you? Simple as that. Like, what do I do in order to get women to talk to me and like me? And like, so speed dating became a big thing. I got 5 minutes with every woman at that speed dating event. I got 5 minutes. How do I get her to like me? And that was an interesting case study for me because I've been to hundreds of speed dating events. And online dating was really, really interesting. How do I create a profile online that I would get people to like me? And this is before Facebook. You know, this is going back my mid-20s. So, you know, this is almost 20 years. There's not much social media as back then. So I had to, like, understand what does another human being want in me from a branding position. I didn't call it branding back then, but, like, profile me. It was like discovering who I was and jumping, you know, forward 10 years after that, my mid-30s, I'm finding myself living in Russia at the time. I was in Moscow. I was already much better as a networker, connecting with people, making friends, organizing events, still being an introvert. But I learned that, hey, this is the best way to get out of my shell. Constantly challenge myself, constantly find myself in uncomfortable situations, which when I do it a few times, get super comfortable. And I had a local university reach out to me. And it was at the time where I still had like a job. And I was 33 at the time. I had a job. And they said, hey, can you come and teach our MBA students and our Startup Academy students about networking? And I was like, I don't know. You guys know I don't have a university degree. I don't know how to teach a university. Like, no. Our students, like they took some votes. And many of our students know you. They voted for you. They said that you're the best one. Can you please put together a presentation? We'll even pay you money. I was like, hey, okay, let's go. Whoa. I'll do it, you know?
So the students knew you were a pro networker before you really labeled yourself.
Yeah, so just some of the students, again, like Startup Academy and MBA, these are not regular university students. Like, you know, MBA is MBA. These are people in business. Startup Academy were usually startups. And that was my scene. I was in the startup scene. I was just connecting with people, helping. Hey, how can I help you? This and that. And I was like playing around with being a coach a little bit back then. I was like trying to mentor people because I've been an entrepreneur for many, many years myself. And people knew that I loved connecting. And I know this guy. Let me introduce you to this guy. And I just loved introducing people, especially face to face. If I'm with you at an event, you want to be near me because I'll introduce you better than you can introduce yourself. I love that. And I practiced it. And I took that as a big compliment. And I still have my first presentation that I did in front of this class, and it was amazing, and they loved it. Now, what was interesting then, over many, many years, I started getting calls from not just universities, but many corporations, multiple governments. I've spoken about the topic over 1,000 times in my life now, online and offline, in over 50 different countries. Again, speaking to government officials, speaking to billionaire like masterminds, speaking to high school kids about making friends. There's networking has been broken down into a science, into what is strategic partnerships, what is really personal branding. How do you find yourselves like super confident right away to talk to a local king here in Bali that just walked in front of you? How do you do that? Like, how do you find yourself moving into a new industry and you have no friends and no connections in this new industry and you have to connect? Or like myself, I've moved countries 6 times. How do you move countries and find yourself having a soft landing so you can make connections? And because I had so many people asking me questions, and sometimes I didn't know the answers, I found it fascinating to experiment. I was like, wow, that was a really good question. Can I experiment on myself? Like, what would I do in that situation? How would I start talking to a billionaire that's just sitting in front of me and I've never known him, and he has 2 security guards standing in back of me? Like, how do I, oh my God, that's Steven Seagal right there at the lobby of the hotel. What would be the best way to walk up to him, start a conversation, get his business card and stay in touch with him? And it was cool because last year I'm in Dubai And I've had multiple conversations with Steven Seagal then, but he sends me a message saying, hey, I noticed that you're in Dubai. Come and join me for dinner tomorrow night. I'm like, okay, this is awesome. Nice. Long story short, he invites his son. Still until today, I'm coaching and mentoring his son. And for me, it's a big honor. It's a big, big honor to be able to see someone who was a childhood hero of mine and still someone who I look up to because I think he's an amazing human being, asking me to mentor his son. And now I'm friends with his son. I don't need him to pay me. It's more about, you know, mutual kind of karmic partnership. So for me, the becoming a thought leader in networking has been a journey of me being uncomfortable in so many situations and wanting to take that pain away from others. So I just started speaking about it and telling people the hacks that you can go around when it comes to networking to make life easier, to make business easier, to grow a business, to make money, to find friendships, whatever it really is that you need.
I want to hear about some of those experiments, like what ones maybe worked well the first time or what ones you had to tweak. I'm curious about that process.
So, you know, going back to the experiments that I did like 10, 15, 20 years ago, I don't remember all of them, but like, for example, something I tell people that I've tried, not everybody is willing to do it. If you're single and you just get out there, depending on what you do for a living, please try online dating and try speed dating. Try it at least twice or three times or five. Just try it. Even if it's uncomfortable, it's embarrassing, but there's millions of people doing it and they're good quality people. A lot of them are good looking people. Why not put yourself in that experimental position that really works, you know? And even if you don't find the love of your life, you could still practicing learning how to introduce yourself. You still practice learning how to talk about yourself, how to brand yourself, which is an amazing part of networking. For me, practices that I do today is auditing my network, which is really important. At any given day, you can wake up in the morning and look at your calendar at one stage, not first thing in the morning. I sleep very far away from my phone, but at one stage in the morning, within usually I touch my phone within one and a half hours of waking up, and I'll look at the calendar and I'll ask myself, am I happy with the people I'll be talking to and meeting with today? And you could do this on the same day. You could do this 1 week in advance. You could do this a month in advance sometime. And you can also look back a little bit and say, hey, let me just quickly open my phone, open WhatsApp or Telegram or wherever it is that you chat with people and scroll down, literally scroll down 3 months or 6 months and ask yourself, why have I not been in touch with these people for 6 months? This is very interesting. The universe, God, whatever you believe in, brought this human being to my life. I was in touch with him. Maybe I was friends. Maybe I worked with him. Maybe we explored a business partnership. Maybe I just enjoyed painting class with them. Whatever it is, a hobby, a business, whatever. Why have I not been in touch with that person? And the number one reason humans come up with is time. But that's not fair because we all have the same amount of time. So what does it mean if someone says to themselves, well, I don't have time to follow up with these great people, but they're great people. I love them. It was a really good opportunity, or it was a really nice friendship, or they made me laugh, or they lifted me up. It was a co-elevated kind of relationship. Then we need to start hacking time. And that's the sort of practices I started looking into maybe 5-7 years ago when I was studying the depth of masterminds and master hearts and looking at how we need to apply algorithms to the way we sometimes hold conversation or hold space for others to be in dialogue. And I started looking how time is sometimes a little bit misleading. And we've not been taught time. No one has been taught in high school time management. Mm-hmm. Like if you think about it, like something as simple as like time, like, wow, why have we not been taught that? Like, why do you need to be an adult and take your own initiative to go to a time management class or to watch time management video? Why? Why have we not been taught that we can actually slow down time? We can actually speed up time. We can actually have very meaningful time with attention to someone else, whether it's family, whether it's my kids. I love having meaningful, you know, beautiful time with my kids. And I allocate that time to have fully with them, no phone, no distraction. I do the same thing with clients. And once I started hacking that, I understood that there's a lot of practices that we could take. And, you know, looking back again on speed dating, why did they only give us 5 minutes with another person before they rang a little bell for me to move to the next person? When I started studying human networking to the depth of it, I learned that there's so much that we don't know. And even myself, someone who's been studying it deeply for 10 years, I still rank myself maybe a six and a half out of 10 on my best day of networking. And I've been on covers of many magazines in the world as a networking guru. But no, there's so much that we don't know. It's amazing. And it saddens me when I speak in front of audiences, high-level people, and I ask them, hey, how do you rank yourself on networking, looking at online, offline networking, looking at, you know, personal development as a big part of networking, starting, ending conversations, branding, looking at networking as a follow-up strategy, looking at networking as showing up at an event or being able to attract clients or being able to make friends, being able to be a part of a parent's committee. I'm a parent. Networking is so complex, and people raise their hands and say, oh, no, I'm an 8. I'm a 9 out of 10. It saddens me because they don't see the potential of growth.
It's like how every driver is above average. So there's in the world of chess, they've studied the difference between the masters and the grandmasters and the beginners. It's not that they're looking at more total moves, is that they're actually looking at less. They're making less decisions, but they've like aggregate, they have this experience. So they've aggregated like different ways the board is set up, and you have all this experience with networking. So you can eliminate a lot of things. And I'm wondering if you could use this analogy of like, as a chess master, like what do you see in human connection in relationships that less practiced people might not see?
I love that. So first of all, congratulations. You've just formulated a question that's never been asked to me like that before. I love that you connected it to chess. It's genius, actually, because chess is a lot of algorithms, as you said. And yes, there are, like, I actually have a whole program out there that someone once asked me to do in front of an audience. Gil, tell us, please, the 100 mistakes that people make in networking. And I literally had to sit there. And I had to like really think about the different situations of networking. And I had to really put myself in scenarios of networking. If you want to get a table at a restaurant and the restaurant is fully booked, can you charm them? Can you find a way to do that? Can you drop a name of someone? Can you quickly research the restaurant on LinkedIn, find out the name of the director of the restaurant and say, hey, is this person here? You know, there is a lot of hacks to looking at networking, of finding a dream job, attracting an investor, jumping into a pool of a community that is your ideal client and audience. It's great. You don't have to look for clients. You can find them in pools. You can find them in not literal pools, but metaphorical pools of communities and clubs. And so when looking at mistakes, there are so many, and I wouldn't even know where to start, but let me just give you a few. So something as simple as going to an event. You know, people try to either they love networking events or they hate networking events. And what I try to tell people is there's no such thing as really as a networking event. Every event that you go to, whether it's with your family or friends, birthday party, conference, whatever, musical, every event is a networking opportunity as long as there's other human beings. No problem. Yep. But now, you know, in the last 3 years since I've been living in Bali, I've been studying the way nature networks. I have a massive edible garden at home, and I've been studying how nature networks underground. And what does it mean for the roots to connect to each other? So you can actually be alone, I understand, in nature and still be actively networking. And I tested that on myself. We could talk about that later if you want to. I did a 4-day dark retreat where I sat alone in complete darkness in a room that had what I needed, a shower, toilet, bed, and they brought me food 3 times a day through a dark box, and I was still able to network. And that was a very powerful experiment on myself. And the mistake I see that people make when they're going to an event and they maybe don't look at it as a networking opportunity, they're thinking right away, you know, let me go and talk to my friends instead of, hey, the people at this event are also my friends' friends. So why should I maybe consider to talk to some new people? So number one, consider to talk to new people when you show up to any new networking opportunity. Don't always talk to the exact same people. Challenge yourself a little bit. Number two is the mindset. The mindset. What mindset are you in when you're walking into any event? Are you in a mindset of criticizing yourself? What am I doing here? I have so much work to do. Another boring event. I don't know anyone here. They're all so weird looking. Or are you in a position where, oh my God, I'm so excited that I'm here. This is exactly what I need today. I'm happy that I'm going to put my phone away. I'm not going to think about work. I'm going to connect with amazing people. These people around me look beautiful. They look inspiring. I want to talk to new people today. And I'm going to get myself out of my comfort zone and talk to at least 5 new people, get their numbers, and then I'll be okay to leave home. Like, what is that mindset you're in when you walk into any event with any people? You know, it doesn't really matter. Put yourself in a complimentary mindset where you're happy to be there. You're confident to be there. And you literally say those things in your head as you're walking in. Otherwise, you'd be like coming in, oh, another weird networking event. Oh my God, everyone's going to ask for my business card. Let me just go to the bar and get a drink. And that's what most people do. They walk into an event. They start criticizing the location themselves, criticizing the people. They look for someone they know to make it easy on them. So, let me just go talk to Joe. Oh, let me just talk to Melissa and see how she's doing. Hi, Melissa. How are you? Good. How are you doing? Oh, I'm great. Thank you. Or how are you? I'm fine. Are you? What's new? Oh, nothing new. Blah, blah, blah. You know, instead of going and challenging yourself, talking to new people and say, hi, my name is Gil. You know, I'm really looking forward to connecting with some new people. I'm just setting up my new business right now. I'm curious. Tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, what are you doing right now in your life that's very exciting? Or what kind of passion projects are you involved in? Or what kind of startup are you working with that's going to change the world? You know, so you can allow yourself to be a little bit more curious, which is also a very powerful mindset to be in, instead of being, I know everyone here, or I know what it's going to be like, or I know I'm not going to have a good time. And many people are like that. They put themselves in a position where they think they already know. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They think they know how bad the event's going to be. They think they know that everyone is going to drain their energy. Instead of being curious, who's here? Who can change my life? Who can I inspire? What exciting people am I going to meet today? How can I leave with one person that potentially could change my life? And there's a lot more, by the way, mistakes that people do. As simple as eating when they serve canapé or desserts or something, and eating with your hands and then shaking someone's hand right after. It's a very simple one. But I'm like, guys, if you're going to shake my hand with your right hand, please eat with your left hand. Like, please, if you're going to hold a cold drink that's full of ice with your hand, don't hold it with the same hand you're going to shake hands with, because then your hand is wet and cold. And if I'm going to shake your hand and your hand is wet and cold, if you're going to introduce yourself, I'm not thinking about what you're saying. I'm like, why is my hand so wet and cold right now? This is disgusting, you know? Or like women that go to the bathroom, I don't know why, and they would put hand cream at an event. Don't do that, ladies. Don't do that, because if you come out of the bathroom and shake my hand and your hand is creamy, I don't know if it's cream from cream or if it's something that you just touched that's slimy. But I'm Gil Peterson. I'm completely okay with that. Most people, you take them completely out of their zone, because most people are just normal human beings. Most people don't believe that they're superhumans. Most people don't believe they're angels. I believe they are. I believe everyone are superhumans around me. I believe they're angels that have stepped into my life, because I do believe that the universe, God, whatever everyone else believes in, I believe that the universe and God gave me massive gifts in life. And the biggest gift they gave me is other human beings. And that's how I see it when I network.
I want to know about the dark. I want to know how you were networking. What does that mean to you? You were still networking while you were in the dark room.
Completely. Absolutely. And it's something that I was very scared of. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how many of you have been to like Vipassanas or any kind of a retreat where you retreat on your own. Some people go in caves. Some people go on a mountain. So I've been starting to do this since 41. When I turned 40, I still had massive parties, had big, hundreds of people. When I turned 41, I was already in Bali. COVID hit. It was the first year of COVID. So in Bali, like everywhere else in the world, a lot of things were closed. Even the mountains were closed, like touristy areas. And I turned 41 and I had this kind of download, this clarity, I need to be on my own, which I've never done that as an adult. As an adult, I went from being an introvert to loving being around people. I went to the extreme of wanting to be around people, wanting to be connected to people, wanting people around, wanting. I was almost like a collector of people. And I had to go through this extreme transition in myself that was not comfortable. And I'm still not fully there, but I've learned how to disconnect. So when I was 41, I went up a mountain here for 3 days. I was basically on my own in a tent. It was COVID, so no one else came on the mountain, which was amazing. It was raining the whole time, so I couldn't make any fire. It was raining 90% of the time, so I couldn't make any fire. I couldn't eat any food. I basically lived on water and some fruits and nuts. And that was okay, no problem. Jump forward to last month. I've been wanting to do some sort of a retreat, a Vipassana, which is usually disconnecting from people in general. For those who don't know, check it out in more detail. If you want more research, feel free to write me. But I've been hearing from some friends that they've been doing what's called a dark Vipassana. And some people do it for 2-3 days. Some people do it for 5-7 days. And I said, you know what? I'm going to book it for 5 days and see what happens. And I went in. And it's basically you're in a small room, tiny room. You have a single bed, you have a shower, you have a toilet, you have a water cooler, and you have kind of a small little table with a small little kind of chair connected to it. And next to that table, you have this kind of dark box where they would put food through. So you would never see any person. You would never see any light. You cannot see your hand. Yeah. So for four, I stayed for 4 days. You cannot see your hand. Your eyes do not adjust because there's not even a little bit of light that comes in. Of course, you don't have a phone with you. They take the phone away or you give it away. And it's really important to have some practices. So I had a couple of my friends give me some mentorship. I was very scared of going into this, to be very honest with you, because really? As a child and as a young adult, I still had fear of a dark. So I was thinking, would I have any nightmares? Would I have any like thoughts, like hearing some noises outside? You know, what is it? I also believed that I had a fear of being alone, of being disconnected, of not being able to see my kids, of not being able to reach out to someone, of not being able to write someone on social media. I thought I'd go crazy. I'd be bored. I was like, what would I do? What I did is I listened to some friends and I basically came up with a daily routine that I try to kind of keep to without knowing the time. So you don't know what, because you don't know what time you wake up. You just wake up and you're thinking, is it 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm still tired? Or is it already 7 o'clock? I don't know. Like, how do you know? You know when it's 9 o'clock in the morning because they bring you breakfast. So I know that on average, I woke up 6 to 7 a.m. every day. Like I do anyways. I always wake up at around 6:30 with my kids. I love it. I had to come up with some morning practices. So working out, some kind of body movement, meditation. I'm not a professional meditator, but I got into it much more, of course, because you're in the dark. You get nothing else to do. Breath work is something I love doing. I think you're probably as an adventurer. You also love breathing in deeply and going into specific algorithms of breath work where you can activate some parts of your body. You can really be a lot more in peace if you do that. You feel a lot healthier. So I really got into breath work. Taking naps during the day is lovely. Again, I don't know if it was a 30-minute nap or a 2-hour nap. I don't know. But naps were awesome. Usually I took naps like usually within an hour or two after lunch. Lunch was around 1 o'clock, I think. That's what they said. that's what they said, you know, and dinner was at 6. What was really unique is something I studied. I've been studying a lot personal development for teachers. I've spent a lot of time with Tony Robbins. I've been to 30 of his events and I promoted him for many years. Spent a lot of time with Eckhart Tolle, with Jay Abraham. And one of my favorite teachers is Geshe Michael Roach. Geshe Michael Roach wrote the book about karma. He wrote Karmic Management. And he was teaching in his training that in meditation, we don't always have to clear our minds and be quiet. We can actually think of another human being. And with affirmation, with positivity, send them health. You know, sometimes we pray for other people. What does that mean? It's the same thing as meditating with one person. And that's what I did. And every single day I said, okay, one day I meditated on all my old bosses. It was really, I just went from boss to boss. You have nothing to do. Yay, yay. You have to be in your mind. You have nothing to do. You're in the dark, you know? And you got a lot of time during the day. In one of the days, and I told this to my wife so I can mention this, I actually meditated on ex-girlfriends. And I've been with my wife for 13 years. So imagine, I got to go back to a few ex-girlfriends thinking, how was I as a man? Did I end it rightly? Was I a gentleman? How are they doing in their life, you know? And then I went into some of my clients, and then I went to some of my friends, and I went into some of my mentors, and I was really thinking about them for multiple minutes, like really thinking about the relationship and sending them positive vibes and thinking about some people that maybe there was tension, and was saying, how can I clear tension with these people? Or how can I send apologies to them? And it was really powerful, brother, like, you know, many of those people wrote me. That, whoa, to me was the weirdest thing ever, because I went into the retreat on the 5th of January and I came out on the 9th, and many of those people wrote me. And yeah, they might have just written me Happy New Year's, but even an ex-girlfriend wrote me and said, I was thinking about you for the last few days. I don't know why. Is everything okay? Are you safe and healthy?
I don't know why.
And,
I know why.
and to me, it was weird because two old bosses from like 15 years ago wrote me saying, hey, I'm thinking of coming to Bali. I checked you out on social media. I saw that you're in Bali these days. Can you give me some advice? I'm like, yeah, of course. What do you mean? Another old boss wrote me saying, hey, are you still in this industry? An industry that I've not been in for like 10 years. He's like, are you still in this industry? We're looking to expand globally. I noticed on LinkedIn that you were very active in Dubai and businesses. Can you connect us with some people? I'm like, yeah, of course. And I left them all a voice message. I love voice messages. Again, using 30 seconds to a minute voice messages is one of the biggest tips I can give to people here in networking. It's a very, very powerful way of following up with people and connecting. I left them all a 1 minute voice message saying, hey, it's been an amazing year. How are you doing? Like, I haven't spoken to many of them for years. So I gave them a quick update, told them that I went on a dark retreat, thanked them for following up with me. And it was a very powerful moment. So yes, we can network in the dark. Yes, we can network when we're alone. We can network with ourselves. We can network with God, with the universe. We can network with nature. And of course, we can network with people easily. But that content might be too much for people because they think, ah, this guy is too spiritual for me, too esoteric for me. I don't believe it. It's not something I need people to believe. There's a lot of scientific proof out there that many, many universities did proof on cancer patients. When cancer patients were taken out of their network and were literally taken away from their family, their friends, and they were put into some sort of a nice club, a nice place where they can get cured of cancer. When they kept them super busy, what a program. Every day there was a program, super busy, new friends, new games. And 90%+ of them got cured from their cancers. There's so much data out there on this, ladies and gentlemen. So much. The ones that were not kept busy, or the ones that were kept with phones, connecting with their families, connecting with their friends all the time, the ones that were allowed visitors all the time, or even worse, the ones that were not taken away from their families. They were just placed into some sort of a program, but they were still living at home, same friends and same family. 90% of them stayed sick. Wow. And it was, yeah. And there was, of course, a lot more data on how many of them passed away. We don't have to discuss that. But there's been so much research in the world done with how we can stay connected with people. And what does it mean to truly network? And what does it mean to be within the network or to nurture the network? And there's reasons why people say your network is your net worth.
And so let me just recap that really quick. You said the people, please, that were separated from their network, that is the influences on their life, those were the people, yes, that were cured more.
Yes, yes.
And the
of
people
course.
That kept the influences.
Yes.
So there's a link between the influences, a potential correlation between influences.
But,
the cancer.
Yeah, but this is scientific data that exists out there, that most cancers are not caused by parabens and non-organic products. They're not caused by food. The food and the parabens, of course, add to it. Cancers are caused by cancerous people around us. And these cancerous people are not bad people. I don't think there's bad people out there. There's people with some bad intentions. There's people who have had a really bad day or a really bad week or a really bad year. And because of that, they're sad. And because of that, they're in pain. And if you are in pain, or if you are just frustrated, or if you hate your job, like 80%+ of the world hate their jobs, and every time you hate your job, you meet with your friends and you complain about your job, you complain about traffic, you complain about the government, you're just complaining. It's not positive energy on those people. And you're not helping them to co-elevate, as one of my dear friends, Keith Ferrazzi, written recently in a book, to co-elevate with people is to bring each other up within our family, within our community. What is the opposite of co-elevation? If I'm going down, I'm taking you guys down with me, which happens a lot, unfortunately. So I've learned a lot of hacks on how to not necessarily disconnect from family or friends, but how to create space between me and some people. And when I create space between me and others, I leave space for others, new people, to come in. And that's a really beautiful part of human networking.
I want to circle back to earlier in our conversation when you were talking about the King of Bali, like what you would do to meet the King of Bali. A lot of people don't have that type of situation coming up, but if they did, it would be nice to know how would you handle that? Or how did you handle it?
Yeah, so you know, I've been in situations quite a few times in my life, I think maybe the last 5 years, where I've been around royalty. I've been around royalty from different parts of Europe quite a bit, different parts of Asia quite a bit. And in Bali, I got very, very fortunate because early on in my stay, within our first month, because we came to Bali on vacation, brother. We were here on vacation a month before COVID. We were living in Singapore, big house, nice. We came to Bali with two suitcases, two kids, you know, and that's it. And COVID hit and we're like, COVID, I don't know what it is. I was like, to my wife, baby, let's just stay for an extra month. Bali is easier. It's more free. It's nicer. And we'll go back to Singapore after. Hey, man, I never been back to my home in Singapore. You know, it was crazy. It was only in September of last year that I finally went and took some of my things from storage. I had to move out of my home via Zoom. And that was a very powerful position to be in, to suddenly go from being stuck in Bali to being connected. Because what happened to me when I chose to stay in Bali, and that was a really magical time, because, and this is like, some people would say, no way, Gil, this story is too much. The evening that, I don't remember the exact date, but it was the beginning of January, my wife and I were heading to an event where we knew one of the king and queens of Bali and their father, which was his father, which was a great king, is like very important person in Bali, we're going to be at this event. It was a special dinner for them. A very, very big honor. And we went there specifically because we heard that the queen, who's an amazing chef, she's actually going to cook. And it was like a small event, like 30 people or so. And on the way to this event, I made a decision with my wife. Listen, this thing, COVID is coming up. It was like middle of January, we already heard something COVID is coming. Like, we heard about it in the world. We said, okay, let's just stay for another month and see what happens. We didn't know anything about lockdowns or anything like that. And it was on the way to this event. We show up at this event. She goes to the left. I go to the right. I love networking with my wife. But we have this agreement that whenever we're in events, we don't stay together the whole event. We go out and circle back in. We go out and circle back in. We make introductions for each other. We support each other. But we put ourselves in uncomfortable positions of being alone. It's cool. Even though we knew some people, of course, at the event, it's still, networking alone is always better as a practice. And at one stage, I'm just talking to some friends and I see this gentleman on his phone, an Indonesian gentleman, dressed in traditional clothing, which many here dress in traditional clothing every day. And I just saw him on his end. I said, hi, you know, you want to come and talk to us? I see you're alone. Come. My name is Gil. Nice meeting you. I'm assuming you're also here for the dinner. I'm very, very excited. You know, I've never met anyone in the royal family. And we talked for about 10 minutes. And, you know, I asked him a little bit about himself. And he says that he's a part of a community. He's a leader in a community here and a big part of Bali. And nothing about royalty. And I tell him a little bit about myself. And I tell him, I love coaching and mentoring. I really love supporting entrepreneurs. He's like, wow, it would be a great pleasure. Maybe you can come to my home and talk to some of the leaders in our community about this. And what is networking and how to create this abundance in your life. And I was like, yeah, of course. And like at one stage, maybe 5 minutes later, I hear someone kind of ringing a bell and saying, please, ladies and gentlemen, come take your seats on the tables. They set up a very beautiful settings. And then suddenly everyone's sitting down. I'm sitting to my wife and she's like, how are you? I'm talking to nice people. And suddenly they start introducing who we're there for. And he stands up. And him and his, he was not the great king. He was the son of the great king, but also still he was a prince, but now he's a king because his father passed away last year. And it was a really beautiful kind of, for me, I look at my wife and like, baby, I've just been talking to this guy. You know, I have his phone number. You know, what is this? And I changed it. I went into my phone while they're introducing him. And instead of just writing Erawan Bali, I wrote King of Bali. And it was really cool. I still have him on my phone as Erawan King of Bali. Now, again, he's not the only king. There's 9 kings in Bali in different regions. Okay. To me, he's one of the nicest kings. He's a very powerful guy, not necessarily rich, but powerful from the connections that he's got and the people that he can influence in very positive ways. And the message here for people is if you're going to find yourself instead in front of, you know, Richard Branson, Elon Musk, a king of a country, treat him the same way you would treat a complete stranger. And I could tell you that this really came because of experience I've had with others. You know, Derek, I remember back in the days, one of the practices I took on to step out of my comfort zone in my early 20s when I moved to London from Canada, I had a very thick accent in English because French is my second language, Hebrew is my first language, and English is my third language, a language that I never really properly learned in school. I never had grammar classes. You know, I studied English at a later age where in my first class, I knew the ABCs and they gave me a book and said, write a book report. I'm like, hey, I'm 14 years old. I cannot read. And you want me to write a book report? But what was interesting back then, I spent a lot of time every single evening after work, about 5 minutes at a time. I took that lesson from speed dating to speak with homeless people. I literally went after work every day to the bakery right next to my work. And I bought all the old pastries they have that they didn't sell. And they would sell it to me at a big discount. I didn't have a lot of money. I went to the supermarket and bought some fruits. And I went to each homeless person about 5 minutes. I literally gave myself almost like speed dating just to learn to listen to them and speak. Listen to them and speak. Learn how to ask them good questions. Learn how to ask them open-ended questions. I wanted to learn how to engage in conversation with someone that would not judge me. Because I was not a confident guy. You know, I was sure that people would judge me because of my thick accent. And, you know, I wasn't confident as a young man. And speaking to hundreds and hundreds of homeless people taught me that a human is a human. And as long as I believe that I can add value to a human, which means I can ask him a good question, I can just give him my attention. So I have questions ready for Elon Musk when I meet him. I was ready when I met, I'm ready. When I met Richard Branson, I was ready for that conversation. And I knew that I would not be alone with him. And I knew that there'd be other people in the room. And I knew that I would need to somehow shine outside of the other people in the room so that he would give me his attention. And that's the way I managed to get his business card after 5 minutes and the way I managed to get a photo with him because he appreciated the questions that I asked him because I prepared myself for the meeting with him. So preparing to meet with someone of high status, one, you can prepare yourself by doing, if you know you're going to meet with someone high status, do your research. What's important for that person right now? What do you think this person would want to talk to you about? What kind of question you can ask him that would make him excited to answer him, to answer the question? And if you don't know you're going to meet them, be human to human. Be grateful, be humble, ask a good question, ask for advice.
What did you ask, Richard?
So with Richard specifically, I knew I was going to meet him in the green room before a speech. It was an event that he spoke at many, many years ago in Moscow. And I knew I'd be able to get in the backstage because I knew the event organizers. And when I walked into the backstage, it was like 30 people. I was like, okay, everybody asking him questions. And I see that for the first, everybody is asking the same questions that you can read on Google what Richard has already answered 100 times. Like, what are the top books you can recommend, or what failure did you learn from? Like, just common questions, you know, like Richard always answered them. I did my research and I said, you know, I looked for this moment of silence where there was a window of opportunity of no one asking, and I just jumped in. And I kind of pushed my, I'm a little bit tall, so I kind of put myself on my toes to even be taller. I was like, hey, Richard, I'm really curious to know. I've read recently that you're looking to launch a Virgin Airline between Moscow and London. You've been having some delays. Maybe myself or someone in this room can offer you a solution for this challenge. Very simple. Suddenly, the whole room looks at me because I didn't just say I can solve it. I knew these people in the room. I knew that some of them were very resourceful people. And I didn't come to Richard saying, give me, give me, give me. I was like, Richard, we'd like to give you. Yeah, you're a billionaire. Yeah, you're very resourceful. But hey, clearly you have a problem. You can't do Virgin Airline Moscow-London. Maybe we can help you. And he loved it. He loved it. That was great. And I even followed up with another question later on because I knew what he wanted to talk about. And for me, it was just a great opportunity to have to say, hey, I'd love to follow up with you on this, because at the time, I was a very big promoter for Tony Robbins. And I was literally bringing thousands of people every year to Tony Robbins events. And some of them were happening in London. And I was bringing them from Moscow because that's where I lived at the time. And I said to him, hey, if you are going to be setting up soon, I'd love to actually help because I work with one of your friends, Tony Robbins, and I can guarantee that I could probably fill up the first plane because I was very confident. Hey, plane has 300-400 seats. I was taking 1,000 people at a time to a Tony Robbins event within our community. So I knew I could fill it up. And he's like, yeah, here's my business card. And the coolest thing is at the end, everybody wants photos. He has no time for photos. His PA says, sorry, no time for photos. He's got to go. Let's just do one group photo together. As soon as we take the group photo, I walked up and say, Richard, thank you for that. You know, my wife is never going to believe we just talked. She's just finished reading your book. She's your biggest fan. He's like, quickly, take a selfie with us and show it to her. He asked me to take a photo with him. Hey, that works.
Amazing.
And it's also something that can help people understand if you're meeting with someone of very high status, someone that you respect, you look up to, someone of royalty, it doesn't really matter. You don't have to put yourself in a lower position of like, oh my God, please give me answers of life. You could put yourself in a position of curiosity, of interest, of respect, of gratefulness. You could say thank you. And you could say, wow, this was a really powerful moment to me. Thank you for sharing your words of wisdom. Do you mind if I take a photo with you just to remember this day for me? Not just say, hey, can we have a selfie, please, so I could show it on social media that I met you. It's a different approach to meeting high-level people who have maybe accomplished more in their life.
What an amazing story. And yeah, it's so unique. That's awesome. You were telling me as we were getting started that you're working on a PhD thinking about networking and time. So PhDs, at least I'm a PhD dropout. So we were in microbiology and virology, actually. You have to do some of your own research, right? You have to think of a problem and create something brand new in the world. What is it that that's like piqued your interest enough to do a PhD?
Awesome. Thank you. You know, again, I'm going to give you these points. No one has ever asked me about why I'm doing it. So I've never been to university. I failed out of multiple high schools. I kind of passed through college in Canada because I cheated very professionally. I've said this online many times, so they can't really take that piece of paper they gave me away, which I don't really care about. But I've taught at more than 20 universities around the world. So for me, it wouldn't be a real PhD like you have, because I don't need someone's piece of paper. What I've started doing, I started identifying professors and universities in the world that have been studying anything connected to human networking and anything connected to time. And it's two very, very different subjects, of course. And I've been identifying amazing speakers and experts and professors from many different countries. And I started reaching out to some of them and saying, hey, I'd love to study with you. Is there any way to show up at your seminar, to show up at your class? Can you send me some of your information? They said, sure, read my book. I'm like, listen, I'm dyslexic. I don't read books. I listen to books. I don't want to listen to a big book anymore. It takes too many hours. Do you have any shortcuts to your book? They're like, yeah, you know, I did this kind of speech here. I recorded it. Do you want that recorded? I'm like, yes. Give me a speech that you did at Harvard. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Give me that. And literally, I've been able to get a lot of amazing content from amazing people around the world. I'd like to get to 100 teachers. Now I'm at about 30, maybe 40 different people who I see as teachers. I want to get it from 100 different people who I see as a teacher. So they're not necessarily a teacher. Like, again, someone like Eckhart Tolle, who teaches a lot about mindfulness and spirituality, for me is a massive teacher in time and in networking, because I've spent a lot of time with him personally. I've hosted him at events. We went on vacation together with him and his family. Long story how that happened, but he showed me how he was able to slow down time in an event that he hosted. He did it. And he also able to show me what does it mean to be in full presence with someone. To be fully present with someone is a gift for you and for me. And he was able to show me that and teach me that in the time that I spent with him. And there's other professors around the world that study time, for example. And I'm very curious in time, what does it mean to actually give people time? Because I create a lot of algorithms for the way people have meetings, the way people have host seminars, the way people have family gatherings. There's algorithms that people can play with that create magic every single time. We've hosted hundreds of Master Heart dinners at our home where for half the dinner, there is an actual timer in front of you. But the timer is following an algorithm to allow us to share equally, to allow us to be the same, to allow us to open up our hearts, to allow us to maybe ask for help, to allow us to give, to share advice, to share a story. And in the same way, now we've done this with multiple governments as well, because I've understood that there is something when you break through what we understand what time really is, which I haven't yet. I'm a very, very young student of what time really is, but I'm pretty good at time management. Like one of the assets that I bring to each one of my clients, because I love coaching people, 50% of my time outside of being an entrepreneur, I allocate to philanthropy and coaching and mentoring others. And one of the things I bring to each of my clients, I say, hey, let me work with your assistant, or let us help you hire a business assistant that can help you manage your time. And we have these amazing, very simple algorithms that are really hacks on how to manage time better, how to create a lot more free time in your life. It's amazing. And so time is something I'm very still a junior in. But compared to most people I meet, the way I manage my calendar, the way I spend time with three of my kids, the way I am the, you know, I do philanthropy and I sit on the board. I'm the chairman of the board of my kids' school. And I host many events and I speak at many events for free. And I'm still doing all this. And still I have time to watch movies. And I still have an hour every morning to hang out with my kids. And I still have time for, you know, 5-6 nights out of the week. I read my kids a bedtime story and I'm still able to do that. Because we could break through the disbeliefs and the programming we've been giving about time. What I've become really good at, and this is where I'm very confident, I don't see myself as a guru of networking. I do see myself, if not the number one, but as one of the top leaders in networking education as a student. So I actually believe I'm one of the number one students in the world, of human networking, because I've been studying it crazy, like really crazy for myself. Like I used to have pain. I used to like come home crying. Like no one talked to me. These girls rejected me. I have no clients. I have no money. I've been broke many times in life. And it was just because I didn't allow myself to network authentically. And this PhD I'd like to do, which again, it's not going to be an official PhD, but it's going to be good enough to be able to teach the world more than I do today. I'm already teaching the world this, is I've understood that there is a fear that humans have that is not really openly discussed. If we Google today, the number one fear that humans have, what is it, Derek? Number one fear.
That humans, death, what is poverty, it? Maybe death or poverty?
No.
Being
it's
alone?
Top five. Sorry?
Being alone?
So that's very near. So if you ask most 90 or 100-year-old people, what's the greatest gift of their life. It's, they said it's the relationships that we have built. If you look at the number one fear that human being, as per Google, so many, 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 you know, accumulated stuff, it's public speaking. However, if you flip those two words over, it's just speaking publicly, which is truly a fear that people have. People don't like to speak publicly. Most people do not like to speak at a table to say cheers, l'chaim. Most people don't like to say a speech at their brother's wedding. Most people don't like speaking publicly at all, even if there's just five family members around them. They're like, oh, they're going to criticize me. Oh, what am I going to say? Oh, I need another glass of wine to get comfortable. So I've been studying this and I've understood that some people in the world now, actually, if you look at some of the most important and the most powerful people in the world, they have a new fear, and that's AI. And what is artificial intelligence truly? It's computers networking. That's what it is. So I'm like, hey, if that is the number one fear that we have, actually computers are networking faster than we are, can I challenge that? So Elon Musk's, one of his biggest fears, and he's been very openly about it on you know, on all his interviews, AI is number one fear he has. I'm like, well, what if we can help people become better at networking than computers? Which I don't understand yet. I don't have the answer, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have the answer. But I can guarantee that the answer is something to do. It's a formula, and it's time plus networking, maybe plus something else, equal better than AI.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't have that formula, but I have learned that when I set a simple algorithm, such as 1 minute, you know, AI is one and zero. I believe that humans can have one, two, three. You know, I believe in one, two, three. And most of my algorithms, I have 1, 2, or 3 minutes. Zero is also an algorithm. Don't say anything. Be in complete silence. It's completely okay. You know, but 1 minute, if you create 1 minute, a sharing circle between your team members on a Monday morning, and just ask them to say, how was your weekend and how have you started your day so far? Just one minute. That's it. Or if you ended the week with your team and said, everyone just take 1 minute and say, who in the team was very helpful to you this week? But just 1 minute. Everyone has 1 minute on a timer. Or if you want to take it further, Derek, and you want to have a super deep connection with your loved one, a husband, a wife, a father, a mother, someone who's listening wants to have a deep, deep connection. This is for you, Derek, to have, you know, with your, pick one loved one and have that with them. You set an amount of time. You say, let's do this game for an hour. I call it a game sometimes because people understand that games are fun and games have rules and you can win. So yes, in my mastermind and master heart games, you can win every time as long as you follow the rules. There's very simple rules. There is this one simple rule that I believe is, again, why I'm studying networking and time. This is a powerful one. It's a very deep one. I do it with my wife. I think it's powerful for husband and wife to do. Agree on 1 hour. This is a good level. You can agree on 30 minutes as well. For this 1 hour, let's just say as an example, don't disconnect. So go to the bathroom before. Don't disconnect. Yeah, be near each other. For this 1 hour, don't have distractions. So try not to do it where you have kids running around or like people around you. Try to do it in a place where you can have some peace and quiet just for 1 hour, or even 30 minutes, you pick. Put your phones on air mode, yeah? Put a piece of paper and a pen in front of you. Then put your phone on time down, 3 minutes. Let me just do that on my phone right now. So I'm going to show you exactly what I mean. So on the phone, we all have timers. And we put phone, 3 minutes, time down, going down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And as a gentleman, allow your wife 3 minutes to share anything she wishes. This is not a conversation. This is not a dialogue. This is my alternative to that. It's a sharing session. Now, again, I could take it very further, but because of time, I'm going to keep it very simple for you to try this, Derek, and maybe some of your listeners will also try. 3 minutes for her to share anything she wants, how her day was, how she feels right now, anything in any direction. You can then take 3 minutes and share towards what she said or not. Ideally, you have a piece of paper in front of you. So if your wife said 20 different things in her 3 minutes, which she would, that's what women do. Women will speak about 20 different things in the first three minutes. As men, we tend to only comment on the last couple of things she says because it's the way men and women speak. And this is something you could learn from Alan Pease, someone who's written a lot of books about how men and women speak. And I've built a very deep relationship with Alan recently. He was here in Bali, amazing guy. And he's one of the teachers I have. And 3 minutes back and forth, don't break the rules, don't interrupt someone. If your wife, after 2 minutes, says, I'm done speaking, that's okay. She still has another minute of silence. No problem. It's her time. You don't speak. You can make notes on a piece of paper about whatever she says. If your wife mentioned money or values and kids or vacation three times, hey, you better highlight that. And you better comment on that in your next 3 minutes because she's mentioned it three times. But sometimes they just want to share. Sometimes people just want to vent. They don't need us to comment. They don't need us to be the heroes. They don't need us to give them a solution. And it's amazing because if you do this for 1 minute, I'll guarantee you a few things. First of all, you'll have the deepest connection that most people ever have in conversations because we don't interrupt. We don't jump on top of each other. We give space. And it's an organized space. A lot gets created by chaos. Yes, a lot. A lot of, if you just put people in a room and say, go create something, chaos, yes. But when we create order, like in a recipe, the recipe can come out perfectly every single time. And if we understand that to make the perfect cookie, there's a specific time that the cookie should be in the oven with the heat and the ingredients, why do we think that the way we are having conversations today is anywhere close to perfect? No one has ever been taught in school how to have a friendly conversation. We've never been taught how to make friends. There isn't classes on this. And to me, that is one of the most important subjects as people we should be trying to master. How to network with other human beings authentically, ethically, from the heart, with a mutual understanding that something can flourish from that. And that's my 3 minutes. That was exactly...
That was your three minutes. Nice. Okay, so for a full hour, you go back and forth, 3 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
And there isn't, it doesn't need to be a conversation. There isn't questions and answers. If she wants to ask you a question, or if you want to mention a question at the end, or you could say, can you also please comment on this? And she could choose to comment on it now or not. Or she could say, I want to talk about something else. I want to share something else. And of course, you can have a sharing session one time with your wife to say, hey, let's take this hour of sharing session only to talk about our dreams for this year. Only dreams. I do this with my wife every Valentine's Day. Only dreams over dinner. Or for example, you talk about money. Yeah, that's a very serious conversation to have. But most people fight about money. It is the number one reason for couples fighting today about money. The second reason about shared values. I love having a sharing session with my wife about values of raising kids. We have 3 young kids, 2, 4, and 6. Talk about algorithms, by the way, yeah? 2, 4, and 6. Yeah, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. And so it's not a conversation. It's just a container, a switching algorithmic container for whatever you want to put in there. And you're saying that creates deep connection experience.
Yes. So the 3 minutes for husband and wife, I guarantee will create something beautiful. And I'd like to ask you personally or anyone else that's listening, once you've done it and you've done it successfully, because most people don't do it successfully the first time they interrupt, they go to the bathroom, they're like, okay, I can't handle this. I don't understand. They break the rules. And the funny thing is there's actually many other rules. And the many other rules create more magic. But I don't tell people all the other rules until they've played it at least once following this one rule. Don't break the rule of time. Don't interrupt.
Okay. I'll try it. Yeah. I'll let you know.
And
we'll do
of course, there is another dozen algorithms out there in different situations. Yeah, there's different situations, whether you're speaking to your boss, you're speaking to your colleagues, you're speaking in a meeting. There's so many ways of where time could be given to someone to say, hey, I want to give you 3 minutes to let me know how your week has been, what you've managed to accomplish, and what you need to accomplish next week. You have 3 minutes. Please prepare for that. And you tell your team to prepare to speak for 3 minutes each. And it's a very powerful container because they need to prepare, not that just to come and blah, 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 speak for 10 minutes, and then there's no time for everyone to speak. Or the white introvert, shy guy in the team who never gets to speak for more than 1 minute suddenly gets 3 minutes to share. You create harmony within the network. And guys, I'm not saying, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not saying do this every single day. I'm not saying only work with algorithms in your life. No, you'll go crazy. The people around you will go crazy. But trying it out as a game, once a week, twice a week, in different situations, let me know how it goes, please. And ask me if you want more rules.
All right, I'm going to do it. And I'll message you once we do it. I have one more question, which I circled. Please. And so this was something that you said when someone's talking, you can underline or circle the things that they've said a couple of times. And you were talking about there's a bunch of clients in a pool. And I've talked to a lot of people recently, and they're like, I want to stop using social media, or I don't think I can use ads on Facebook or Google or whatever. So this concept of like, maybe there's like a whole pool full of my ideal clients. It's what people are looking for. So can you just talk about that?
Oh my goodness. So I love helping people with business. Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur from a very young age. And one of the greatest things that I admire the most about myself is that I failed more than most people I know. And I call them successful failures in businesses. And I have failed in so many different businesses, from restaurants and mobile apps and juice bars and software companies and event companies. And many were great successes. Hey, if 4 years running, I became one of the biggest promoters in the world for Tony Robbins. Hey, guys, I've done some major things in my life. I know what it means to make $1 million in one day from a launch of an event. I know. I also know what it means to lose everything in one day when COVID hits. I know what it means to almost go bankrupt but choose not to, because I understand how the networks work. Again, I'm still a young student, but I understand that the way we see our networks should not be in a vision of funnels. I don't necessarily believe in advertising because it's a funnel. 99% of people that see your ad, and most times are not relevant. Most times, advertising is still not where it should be. AI is going to help a lot. It's going to help a lot to really show my ad to the people who really need me, to the people that I want to talk to. Not that just the random people who potentially could buy my product. So when looking let's take a real case here. So can you give me either your case or someone else's case of who needs more products, who needs more clients right now? And what does that client avatar look like? Let's make it a real case, not just random theory here.
Yeah, perfect. So we actually have a new offering. We ran a beta of this last fall with 28 students, telepathy, animal communication, and remote viewing. So using non-local consciousness to different types of communication. And there's so much potential here for this. And I already have some good ideas, right? Like metaphysical podcasters or people, that are in spiritual communities, right? Like they would be interested in acquiring this skill or improving this skill. But I know there's more potential partnerships that I haven't thought of.
Beautiful. So first of all, content is incredible. I love it very much. You know, I believe in it very much. Clearly, Dark Retreat, talking to people, networking with people. I'm there. I was able to see them, and clearly they saw me in their heads. So something that works. And I also worked with some people actually in Moscow back in the days. It was like 7-8 years ago, that had a school, a private school. Maybe I could find it for you. A private school for young kids that were taught how to see being blindfolded.
I've seen the footage of that school.
Yeah, it's really, really incredible stuff. And David actually is the one that can also work with them. So David can also connect you with them, speaking of David before. So I'm really happy that I connect you with David, because he's definitely connected to that world in major ways. What I believe you can explore in such a situation. So first of all, we should always remember that if we have a client avatar, and we can describe that avatar in maybe 7 to 10 words. So not a sentence, but describe that avatar. More men, more women, what age group approximately, where are they living? Like, the more specific you get, the easier it is. Because, Derek, if you tell me, oh, yeah, I just want, you know, people who are interested in this, I'm like, well, it's not really going to work out. If you have five clients in the U.S., five clients from China, five clients from Australia, you're not going to have any proper interaction with them together because of the time zone. So we got to think about time zones a little bit if we want to interact with people physically. So actually, like we're talking right now, I'm in Bali and you're in the other side of the world. So, you know, it has to be different time zones. So we need to consider the different specs of what does that person look like for me. The more details you give to them, you could then ask yourself, where is this person right now? Not physically, but are they a part of a community? Are they a part of a club? Are they a part of some sort of a personal development? Are they shopping somewhere specific? Are they hanging out somewhere specific? Are they people that go bowling? Are they people that go to church in your case? Who are they? So in your specific case, because I know the industry so well, it's very, very easy. Yeah. So there's too many options. First of all, you can look at offline or online communities. Right away, break that down. I believe in mind maps. So the way I think about networks, a network is a mind map. It's like always create mind maps around, ladies and gentlemen. If you have any needs for me, please feel free to reach out to me and say, Gil, I got need for you. you know, I heard you at Derek's podcast. Let's talk. I love that. I love when people reach out to me because, again, it's something that people have a limiting belief. They many, many times they think that everyone is busy. They think that he's not going to answer me. I guarantee answering you. That's kind of what I tell people. I guarantee maybe 24 hours, 48 hours max, but I guarantee answering you. Best way is Instagram or LinkedIn. With you specific, Derek, you can look at communities like Awaken. You can look at communities like Humans I Trust. You can look at communities like Yes, I Trust. You can look at communities like a Tony Robbins community or an Eckhart Tolle event community. If you show up to a Tony Robbins event with 10,000, 20,000 people at the event, over a 3-4 day period of time, you will be guaranteed to meet a lot of people who are very interested in your content because they are already a part of a community that likes personal development. They already want something outside of their existence. You can even go deeper and go into like Joe Dispenza communities. So if you show up to a Joe Dispenza event, or if you look at Joe Dispenza pages, fan pages on Instagram, on LinkedIn, or on Facebook, you'll find people who are already in that realm. They're already interested in that dimension that is outside what we've been taught and programmed, you know, in school. Recently, I saw a documentary with my wife, and it was how schooling has not changed for over 100 years. Mm-hmm. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to completely break through people's limiting beliefs and say, hey, this is a new way that you can expand your mind, a new way of learning, a new way of seeing. Now, of course, the world is not open for this. Most people in the world will think you're crazy. Most people in the world, you know, don't believe in angels. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in things like this. But what you can consider is, where is that 1, 2, or 3% that do? Where do they hang out? Which events do they hang out? And how can I reach out to them? And for me, networking is the easiest way. Now, you have to ask yourself, do I want to network offline and go to such events like Gil just mentioned? Do I want to network online and find these groups and associations? And then you could start interviewing people within those communities. So I believe in cross-pollination. One of the biggest messages I can give you guys today, that when we network, we're not networking one-to-one. It doesn't exist. The whole idea of B2C and B2B, you know, business to customer or business to business, or even H to H, human to human, that's a figment of our imagination. It doesn't exist that way because you, Derek, is a lot more than one. You are, I don't know how many, but not infinite, but you are, for me, you are an infinite amount of potential new connections, introductions, and opportunities. Because I don't know how many connections you have. I don't know who you can introduce me to. You can completely change my life by making 1, 2, or 3 introductions for me, which is why I, Gil Petersil, practice introducing people on a daily basis. Because it's the biggest gift I can give to people. I can completely change their life. And I have. My wife and I, because of some of our events, we've helped more than 18 people get married. 18 was the last one, but we lost track after. So I'm saying more. 18 we know. The other ones we lost track. We've helped hundreds of companies raise money, hundreds of companies. We've helped thousands of people change their lives because they came to an event with us. And at that event, they met other people that became their new network. It became their new connections. And this is why I believe in cross-pollination. Me and you talking today, I'm going to be sharing about you on my social media and some people can come to you. And this is why you got to be considering who in the outside network of my life, I say outside because maybe you don't know them, outside network, has currently a community that I want to talk to. And it becomes a very simple answer. There isn't one. There is many. Like, the questions of networking should not be challenging for us to answer. We should just be asking ourselves better questions to understand where to find more clients and where to find more mentors. And it's not just about finding clients to make money. For me, it's not about finding clients to make money, personally. For me, it's about finding clients so I can have a better influence on the world. To finding clients that could inspire me with projects that I don't want to build, but they are building. I just took on a new client with a business idea that I've been thinking about for years, but I knew I don't want to do it. It's getting paid to study. They're going to be helping people. Zeno, I don't know if I can name drop. They're a new company, but they're doing, you know, learn to earn. You will be paid money to watch a video, an educational video until the end. It's amazing. And I've been thinking about this for years, but I've learned as an entrepreneur, don't create everything yourself. Help others create it. Don't reinvent the wheels, ladies and gentlemen. Don't try to set up another business. Go cross-pollinate with other people out there. Go unite yourselves with other people. Go collaborate with other people and learn about what is your collaboration matrix. And if you don't know what it is, reach out to Gil Petersill. He'll help you out.
Amazing. That's you wrapped it up so nice. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they do want to?
You know, if you have my name spelled correctly on your podcast, which I know you will, I am the only Gil Petersill on Google. So if they type my name on Google, they can choose what is their convenient way of reaching out to me. I have two girls that are helping me to make sure that I respond to my inboxes because sometimes there's too many. But if they ask me a question that is relevant to me, I will answer. If they're saying, Gil, where can I watch your videos? My team will just say, here's Gil's top three videos on YouTube, you know. But if you want to ask me a question, ladies and gentlemen, the best way to do it, send me a voice message or send me a personal question to me, and I will answer it myself. I prefer LinkedIn and Instagram because I'm more active there. But really anywhere, GilPetersill.com or Facebook, there's only one of me. So if you don't reach out to me, ladies and gentlemen, or you, Derek, don't follow up with me after your sharing session with your wife, it's the follow-up methodology. I'm currently writing a new book called The Follow-Up Code. How as humans, we need to just follow up with each other to create gardens of Eden within our network.
Mm. That's a nice concept. Love it. Gil, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure spending some time with you.
Thank you so much, Derek.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, man. Take care. Right. I'll speak to you soon.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.